Welcome to Once Upon a Film Industry. I'm your host, Stephen Lloyd Bennett.
And I'm Al Lopez.
And we are here with the talented Daniel Dewelden. How you doing, Daniel?
Good, man. Thank you guys for having me today.
Welcome to the show, Daniel.
Daniel is an actor and a very talented one. I saw your reel, man. You have the chops, man. You're really good. You're really good.
Thank you. But
thank you for coming on and bestowing some of your wisdom on our listeners. So I'll just start it off, man. What's your story? How'd you get started as an actor?
Yeah. Taking me right back to an article that I recently did, well, maybe about 6 months ago, and I was asked that question. I remember I was in LA. I first came out here to go to college and get my residency and take advantage of being a resident of the state of California. And I was just walking around one day, and then on a telephone pole, I saw a extra casting notice where you pull one of the things to go on a casting call. Kind of tells my age. Yeah, I pulled one of those tickets and I had a roommate at the time. And so I was studying psychology in college here. And I said, let's go on this casting call. Maybe we can make some extra money. And I met this lady and she said, you have this interesting look and vibe, you know, go meet this agent. And growing up on the East Coast, I know you guys know New York and DC. And I thought, oh, this is probably like, you know, some kind of a hustle or they're trying to make some money or something.
Right.
So I went on the call and I brought my roommate again, and it was to this really big time talent management company. And certainly the office was very impressive. I was very green. I was 19 at the time. He gave me sides to a script, me and my roommate. And he goes, go out to the lobby and study it and come back in and give a read. So we both did that individually. And the agent then told me, he goes, you're both green, you have no experience. And he said, your friend, I'm not really interested in, he's a nice guy, you know, but I don't think he's really interested in being an actor. And he goes, if you're interested, go study and come back in 6 months. And we'll see what you're like, then we'll give you another read. And so I didn't think much of it. I left, ended up moving back to the East Coast. And about 9 months later, I flew back out to LA and I've been here ever since. So that was close to 22 years ago. So that's how I got started. And that got me into studying acting formally in college, private master's program through Uta Hagen, through HB Studios in New York and Howard Fine in Los Angeles. And then I got accepted to the Actors Studio in New York and Los Angeles under Al Pacino and Lyle Kessler and all these great moderators that oversee the studio. But yeah, so I've been at the Actors Studio since 2003 and continuously work out of there as I work. But that's kind of some background of how I got into acting. And I got into a lot of theater early on. My first professional job was in 1999, I think it was, a play. So yeah, a lot of theater background, a lot of training. Thankful to be breaking into the film and TV industry a little bit more now. So, but yeah, I hope that answers your question.
What would you say was one of your inspiration to who are you basing your role model off of?
Yeah, you know, I get asked that question here and there. And, you know, I always love Meryl Streep, Daniel Day-Lewis. I think Daniel Day-Lewis, because he's so, you know, and I know when he did the movie Lincoln, how he moved into a house. I think they were filming somewhere in Virginia, maybe, I'm not positive, but somewhere in the country. And how he moved into a house and had no electricity just to acclimate himself to what it might have been like, because the camera's going to pick that up, at those sensitivities. And so I work like that. I get really engrossed in the work and do a lot of studying and daily kind of put myself in that world of, especially if it's a period piece or a really heavy character, you know, really trying to take on the vibration of what might've been going on, similar to like Daniel Day-Lewis. But yeah, I think he is just probably one of the most crafted actors I've ever seen.
Master. Yeah. He's an absolute master. Yeah. Do you believe, you say you have a big theater background, and I'm a sucker for theater actors. I feel like when a theater actor walks into an audition, I'm just waiting for something amazing to happen because I just feel like there's something extra going on there. Do you agree? Do you believe that theater actors have a bit of a leg up on straight film actors?
I think if the film actor has no experience working, maybe. But I just had an interview last week and I was telling the interviewer that, and I'm still learning and I will forever be learning. And anyone who thinks that they're ever learned is fooling themselves. But right. To transfer from the stage to the camera or from theater to the camera is almost like starting over, especially if you have a lot of experience in the theater, because there's a certain way that we acclimate to that space or any space, you know. So, and depending upon what character you're playing and, you know, how experienced of an actor you are, but the transition from theater to film for me has been as tough as like learning how to start acting all over again, because the camera is so sensitive. It never behooves me when I see a current piece that I've just done. I'm like, oh my God, I'm pushing there. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't realize it.
I had an acting coach I started as an actor 18 years ago, 19 years ago.
Okay, and, we're in the same league.
Yeah. I stopped acting around 9 years ago.
Okay.
But I had an acting coach one time and he always told me and that when you theater actor going to film, the biggest challenge is pulling back and making sure that all that you're doing, all the stuff that you would do on stage, you're able to make sure it's smaller and you bring it to the eyes or bring it to an expression or bring it to your breath or whatever. And I just felt like that was a really powerful piece of advice, because I always feel like it's easier to bring down than to try to pull something out of someone. That's why I always love the theater actors, because they bring something to it that is so expressive and so organic and real. I love it.
Mm-hmm. And I think you mentioned like in the past episode with Juliana that sometimes you can kind of recognize a theater actor immediately when they step into the casting room.
Oh yeah. Sometimes I don't look into at their resume, or you know, maybe glance at the resume. I don't notice it. And then afterwards I'm like, that feels like a theater actor. And I would just look at the resume and be like, yep, theater actor. Like, cause they just have something there. And it's not 100% of the time, of course, cause you know, everyone has different experiences, but it's pretty often. So my next thing is this, you're working on a project, which I think is really interesting. Your father is the creator of the Iwo Jima statue. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yeah. And I think that's fantastic. If anyone
Thank you.
Knows about the Iwo Jima statue, everyone's seen it. It's the statue with the four soldiers planting the American flag.
Six.
And your father created that, which is freaking fantastic. And I read that he has statues on all seven continents, mm-hmm. which again is an amazing accomplishment. Do you think that growing up with him, do you think that sort of inspired you artistically in some kind of way?
Yeah, I think like any child is always, whether conscious or unconscious, always trying to chase down the love from their parents, you know, no matter how healthy or unhealthy the family may have been or is, the child is always trying to run down the parents' love, right? And so because my father was in the public eye, more in the public eye than he was a father to me in terms of physically, because he was always traveling and my parents were separated. I was fairly young. So I didn't see him a lot growing up, maybe 2-3 times a year. And then early on around 12, I started to see him all the time and I lived with him, and then that was cool. And so it made me strive even more, you know. And I think it was interesting. I said this some time ago to a friend of mine. I said, just me thinking of who my dad is gives me the belief that I too can succeed as an artist, whatever medium. But then I realized, is that in me, or is that just a thought? And so I believe so I can achieve. And so I truly believe that as much as my father is an enormous inspiration to me, I realized that place in me has to come from the inside out. And I struggle with that. I think, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but you're always living in the shadow of a parent, even if they're not famous. You know, you're always trying to resolve something with them or bring some balance. And so for my dad, his inspiration for me is that it's possible to make a living as an artist. It's possible. So yeah, he inspired me that way deeply. And certainly knowing my father's history and his struggles, you know, all is forgiven, you know. And so you realize we're only part of the solution, you know, or we're part of the problem. So he, in that respect, has been an enormous inspiration to me for what he overcame, for what he achieved. And so may I be able to, you know, be inspired, or anyone else for that matter. So, yeah.
Nice. And the project you're working on now, want to get into it. It's called Monumentimus. What is it? Monumentimus?
Yeah, it's a biopic. That's a documentary on my dad.
Nice.
Felix de Weldon, that covers his life from when he was born in 1907 until when he passed away in 2003. So yeah, it's a biopic on his life and how he was an immigrant to this country. He was a Nazi war refugee that Canada received him. And most of all, my father's family was killed in the Holocaust. And he escaped out. And talk about the American dream. He came here with nothing other than his accomplishments before leaving Europe, and joined the Navy, became a United States citizen, and then became an artist in the Navy. And that famous picture that was taken by Joseph Rosenthal of the flag raising Iwo Jima came over the wire while he was enlisted, and he ended up getting the commission to do the statue. So yeah, it was fate.
That's a phenomenal story.
Oh, thank you guys. Yeah.
Yeah. That's wow. That's talking about like a full circle. Like that's it's.
Yeah. There's a movie there. There's definitely a movie there.
Yeah. 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 We're shopping it around now. We're trying to get it made into a mini series. Because it's so much story.
What's your role there, Daniel? Writing, producing?
Yeah, right now it's with my management company, Barry Crossed. And so my partner and I, Alan Nolasco, we wrote what was the biopic, and then now it's turned into a documentary. And so, yeah, I'm one of the two writers on it. So, yeah.
I wanted to know a little bit about Weekend Warrior. I saw some footage of it. It looks great. So if you could just dive into it and give us some background on it.
Sure. Thank you for asking. Yeah. Weekend Warriors is about to release, I understand, I think April 1st. And I know it's being shopped around. I think it's either going to get picked up by Netflix or Hulu or some streaming device.
Nice. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So that's the director of that film is Richie Greer. And I get to play opposite Corbin Burnson and Jason Lunder, who are in the film. Shot in Los Angeles and also North Wilkesboro, North Carolina. Really, really great shoot. And it's a coming of age for a teenage boy who's being bullied in his high school and decides to take a weekend trip off with his uncle. And then he meets that 10 times of the bully that he had in the high school, hence it being a coming of age story about a young teenage boy and his younger sister who accompanies him in the film. So a dual coming of age, if you will. But so, yeah, I play the lead antagonist. Yeah, it's a drama that takes place where that young boy has to go off into nature and face adversities that hopefully no one would have to face and overcome. So, yeah, I think it's a good positive message for what's going on in the world today with stay-at-home moms and kids because of COVID. And, you know, in the film, you know, I don't wish COVID on anybody, but I certainly don't wish the storyline that happens on in the movie. And you can see this kid has to overcome that. So I think it's going to be a very, very positive message for young kids. And I was so grateful to be part of that film. And
do you play, I feel like judging by your reel, you play bad guys a lot. Like that's your thing.
Yeah, it looks a little bit, right? I think it's an easier niche for me to step into just based on essence or casting. But I am working on something very different on that in a play called Red with the actor Ilya Volek, who played opposite Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Nice.
And he's playing the artist Mark Rothko in a play that's, again, titled Red, that was written by John Logan, who wrote the film Gladiator. And so we're petitioning now. We just shot like a sizzle reel to get the rights, to hopefully get the rights to shoot the play as a movie. And in that play, it's a two-hander. So I play the assistant to Mark Rothko, the very famous Eastern European painter in the 1950s. And so I play an assistant that's kind of submissive and very supportive, you know, kind of almost like a secretary to this powerful artist. And so I am bidding for more roles like that, but there's an essence in me of power play that comes through, even with Zoe. You know, when we did Last Colony, it was a very vulnerable scenes that I was very excited to do. So, yeah, and that's exciting for me to play a villain, to make the audience to care about me, even as the villain, to understand the human experience, that this character did not become the villain just by happen chance. Something that this soul incurred, you know, made them go down a dark path. And so it's always exciting for me to humanize a villainous character with my vulnerability that I love to play as much. So I know when I did Anonymous 616, I often will see audience reviews that will say, like on Amazon Prime or other streaming devices, where they'll say, even though this character was really mean and tough, there was something about him that was endearing, and we understood why he was in pain. So I think that that's my job as a crafted artist, to be able to get to those levels, to play a character that can translate through all culture, through all role confusion, because I think that's where the real humanity takes place. And for me as an artist, I always say I'm only as good as an actor as I am as a person. So the more I open myself up to an audience and have a real human experience, the more I have a healing trust, more trust in life, in the character. And so will the observer of me as the audience. So I know you guys know that as artists and directors and so
actors. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
The range in your characters and the vulnerability that you portray in the characters sends different messages to different people. Like, it resonates differently with each individual that's seeing you. And you kind of, like, when I see, like, that the one, I think it was Anonymous 616, was it? Where it's in a room, right? It's in an apartment. People will see it and see it one way, but the way I saw it was the vulnerability in your character in that particular film. So, and I think it resonates across the board, even with the film by Adam Skelter and that you worked on.
Last Colony, yeah.
What was it? What was it called?
Last Colony.
Last Colony. I mean, even in that film, the vulnerability that you displayed, but yet being aggressive, because it was an aggressive character, but you still played the vulnerability in saving your child. It came across phenomenal. So I just wanted to commend you on that. You know,
that means a lot coming from you.
No, so. Your acting skills are phenomenal. And I see the art and I see the work that you put into it. You know, and I followed you for quite some time and I've seen the progress. And I said, you know, we need to get this guy on the show.
Oh, well, thank you.
And so Anonymous 616, that's on Amazon, I assume?
It is. It's on Amazon. Yeah, you can rent it there.
Nice.
Watch it there, yeah.
So go ahead and check that out, guys. Anonymous 616 on Amazon. So Daniel, what's your process as an actor? I mean, Meisner, Stanislavski, method, like what do you do? Do you do a mix? It seems like you really dig deep into the characters.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you know, years ago, I was at the Actors Studio and I was working on a play, Death of a Salesman, at the Actors Studio. They were doing a production of it. And there was an actor that was in it who I feel awful that I cannot remember his name. But he also was a professional baseball player, I think for the Boston Red Sox or so. But he was an actor at the studio. And I asked him, I was new at the studio, it was early on, like 2005. And I said, what is the method? What's this method I keep hearing about that revolves, you know, in American history around American theater and certainly Stanislavski from the Moscow Art Theater, but coming through to the Actors Studio, he said, there is no method. He goes, this is the, he said to me, this is the method. The method is you've looked at everything. You've tried everything. You've experimented with everything you possibly could. And now you're at the edge of the abyss and there's nothing. And he goes, that's the method. And I, as a young actor, I kind of understood that logically, in a way, but I didn't feel it at all, what he meant. Again, I could mentally process it, but now I think I at least see the light under the door of what that means. And I'm hopeful that the door will open for me one day and really be able to move in that process spontaneously without thought, right? So my process is no thought. So I'm an actor that went from extreme thinking to extreme analysis to extreme studying. I did a play, Danny in the Deep Blue Sea, in 2007 with a wonderful actress, Deborah Durr, and was directed by Michael Arabian, who's a very famed LA theater director and New York director. And before we did the play, I knew her lines, my lines, backwards and forwards. I could recite 60 pages of dialogue. That was my inexperience process, but it served me. I had enough talent to push through. But now my process has gone 180, where I try to not know, because now my sensorially, I'm more aware. And so anything can feed me instantly. And that ultimately is where acting on camera, you've got to get if you want the camera to be looking for you when you're doing a scene, it's where you don't know, and that process, because someone says, well, how do you learn the dialogue? I try to learn the dialogue literally a day or two before I know the scene is coming up, loosely. And even then, very rotely will I try to learn the dialogue. And so when the camera goes off, instantly I recognize that my vulnerability to just try to survive in the pressure of that makes you remember the lines. And it's, talk about testing faith, And I learned that. I got very lucky. I got cast in a pilot called Badland Wives to play a young Doc Holliday. And I was working with Stephen Campanelli, who was the DP and is now executive produced with Clint Eastwood for the last 25 years. And so when I got on set with this man, and he was the director, I realized that the callbacks and the screen test was kind of like the rehearsal, and I didn't know it, even though I hadn't booked the job definitively yet. But when I did, I had been in the room 3 times with production. And so the day of the shoot, we were shooting at Paramount Ranch, which unfortunately has burned down. I remember I walked on set and I was handed this real 1877 Colt 38 pistol, and I had a gun wrangler, and I couldn't touch the gun unless he was watching me. And I was on this set that was a 1877 dental office. I'd never been on the set, speaking about the transition between, having 6 weeks of rehearsal and now you're showing up to a set and you're going to shoot a scene on film and you've never been there before. Wow. This is the speed at which production goes as you get higher up. And that was my birthing, if you will. I was a virgin, if you will, never having been on a set that fast with a very powerful director. And so he looked at me, and I had all this authentic dental equipment from the 1800s, a dental chair. I had never been on the set. And he looked at me and he goes, okay, what are we going to do? And I said, well, whatever you want, and he goes, okay, I'll put you here and I want you to do this and I want you to do that. And I want you to do this. And I'm like, how am I going to remember all of this? I thought to myself, it was some of the best work I ever did in my life, because I was prepared over the callbacks coming into the room, working on the material, through trying to win the part. And now he's got me picking up things and doing things and talking to this actress and one take. And I thought, oh my God, this is what I've always heard Clint Eastwood does, one take. Yeah. And here he is, the protege to this, experienced filmmaker. It's one take. And I'm like, and then when I see the footage, like, I started, and I learned that day, those couple of days that I was filming on that job, wow, how can I get to this right away? So the, again, long-winded, but that's the process, is not knowing. And you have to, you know, you've got to go to boot camp. You have to be on the battlefield enough times to learn how to fight like that. You know, right. So that's right. My process, is not knowing and trusting that I'm enough.
I feel like you can do that when you have the skills and the chops and the experience that you have, because I love actors like that. I think we should work together at some point, because I love
that's the only reason why I was doing this, and hopefully it works with Albert.
You know, this is why I wanted to connect you guys, you know, indirectly.
No, I really love actors like that, because I don't like rehearsing too much. And I value the casting process so much, because if you get the right actors on board, then you don't have to do so much shit on set.
Right. Yeah.
And when you get actors, it's kind of like, okay, you guys meet each other. Sometimes don't even meet each other if that's the scene. And let's just go. I mean, sometimes blocking, of course, you got to get stuff for camera and you got to rehearse those things. But generally, if I have two good actors and I trust these are two good actors, I don't like to rehearse much. I like to just go get their blocking. Okay, we know where you're supposed to be here, and let's just go.
Yeah.
And again, you can only do that when you are an experienced actor. So a note to the newcomers out there, do not do that. Yeah, if you're just starting out, it's your first time on set.
Yeah, I was going to say, you got to get some scars under your belt first, right?
Get a few scars, get a few battle scars. Don't just jump out there, your first thing, like, I don't need to know it.
I mean, I'm just remembering from Stephen's earlier question about the process. Like, I look at myself in that footage and it's like, I'm still trying to get back to that place. I mean, in terms of leaving myself alone, because the director, Stephen Campanelli, is so good. And again, walking in the footsteps of Clint Eastwood, that I see myself in the video and it's just like, I don't even remember shooting the scene.
Yeah.
It's like somebody was shooting me and I wasn't looking, because it was one take, and that was everyone, not just me. That was all the whole, if you look at I'm sure there was another take or two on some incidental stuff that may have happened, but what you see is an actor, me, trying to stay alive, trying to survive in the shot, right? Just like we do in life. At that speed or that level of creativity or filmmaking, someone has figured out, Clint Eastwood, who holds the reputation of trying to shoot one take, is that he knows the actors have so much pressure on them that it instantly turns up the valve of creativity in the department of spontaneity. And that's what you were just saying, Stephen, like, let's not too much rehearsal, because then it's one happy accident after the next. It makes you shrink down and survive, just like when there's an emergency in life, you know?
Yeah.
And I had a good friend of mine tell me that one time. They said, don't just stop thinking. You're your best in an emergency. And that goes for every human being. But it takes you, you know, I've got scars up and down my body, speaking of metaphorically learning that lesson. But yeah, you have to fall down a lot of times.
But I mean, that's just all your hard work and training kicking in when the pressure is high. I mean, and it happens instantaneously. And I mean, like you said, Clint Eastwood understands that, has been through it, and is saying, hey, I'm going to pass this off to other actors because they need to see it.
Yeah. And you don't get into those kind of rooms unless you kind of already understand that. You know, you have to go through these processes as any kind of an artist. Doesn't matter. In person, it doesn't matter. These tests are always before us to learn how to trust, deep trust, and allowing life to happen. So
I feel like you should give that method a name or something. You should get to branding it free fall acting or something. I don't know. I should give it some sort of
the Weldon free fall act.
Yeah, man. Try gotta get you a business going here.
Yeah. No, and so I mean, you know, I'm constantly looking at you and following you, and you're always working, man. Like, you're always working. You're always up to something, doing something. I never see like a stagnant Daniel. You're always working. And it's great to see that, man. Congratulations, man. That's really good. It's even during the pandemic, man. I mean, you're constantly moving, which is something that Steven and I are always, you know, on top of each other saying, hey, man, we got to keep it moving, man. We, you
know, no, I know.
The pandemic's happening. We know we got to find something. So, you know, kudos to you, man. That's not easy to do. So, you know, it's, you know, you're constantly working. That's nice to see.
Thank you. Yeah, it's the only way, you know. It's I felt like I crossed the threshold. You know, I was speaking to a friend the other day, and I was saying how, as an artist, how do you read the road signs? You know, how do you know which way to go? You know, and at some point you cross a threshold, whether you want to keep going one way or you have to take another way. And so it's always of encouragement that getting interviews like this, you know, these opportunities are so huge to acclimate oneself to other artists, to collaborate, especially right now during COVID. You know, I went through that with COVID. I was not too, you know, I'm kind of old school where it's like, I don't like auditioning on Zoom. You know, I like to be in the room. When I get in the room, I get turned on and I get, you know, this kind of old school East Coast, you know, Aries, whatever and because of COVID, it just like transitioning from being a stage actor to a film actor, you know, I had a hard time transitioning, just trying to just do Zoom on a daily basis, you know, because of my sensitivity as an artist. And, you know, and it's like, wow, this is evolution, you know, right before our eyes.
Yeah.
Because just like Star Search, that old 80s show, and what is the more famous one now, you know, where the people
say American Idol.
American Idol.
Voice.
There's talent. There's talent coming up out of the woodwork from around the world. Not just in Hollywood and New York anymore.
Yeah.
And if you got a cell phone and you got talent, you better watch out and you better be really good, because the competition is just getting tougher and tougher and tougher because it's not exclusive anymore. And that's what's exciting about COVID. I think everyone having to work off of their, you know, Zoom and do meetings like this, I certainly have felt the growth and am grateful for it, and have no problem jumping on, you know, the camera anymore. So yeah, it's an exciting time for artists. So yeah.
Nice. What's your mindset when you're going into an audition? I know it's not the same as going into a room, but when you're self-taping or anything like that, what's your mindset? Any good habits?
Yeah, well, you know, I know you guys both know today you got to be off book, you know, because there's 50 other people that are off book and 5 of them are really, really good, you know, so you got to be off book now, you know, when you're self-taping. So, you know, depending upon your experience, whether you can improv a little bit and stay on point and stay on book that way and really bring some really great truth to it. I think that part of it might help the actor, because you're not in the room and you can improv a little bit. You can hang your lines too. You know, you can make them real big. I've done that before. I've gotten huge jobs. I had to audition for a theater job one time. I made cue cards like enormous, you know, they were so big, you couldn't tell I was reading off the cards, you know?
Right.
And then with a little bit of improv, you know, you can just nail it every time. So yeah, the process for self-tape is great lighting, you know, great lighting, great sound, and be off book.
Emergency acting. That's what I'm going to call it. Emergency acting.
Yeah.
Well, this is also the year of, or last year was the year of adaptability, right? Either you adapt or you get left behind, man.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. That's what it's about. And in every respect, politically, humanitarian, as a humanitarian, get on board or be left behind. So
world's changing so fast. You have to.
Yeah,
you have to.
Lately, yeah.
Speaking of world changing, social media, you're on it. Mm-hmm. Like, you are on social media.
That's how I get work. That's how I get work. That's another, you know, if people don't know who you are, I was just talking to this amazing actor, Giovanni Savoia. You guys are going to want to interview him one day. He's looking to be cast in a film that I'm part of that's upcoming. He's old school, super, super gifted. He's from France. He's Italian, raised in France. And I'm like, give me your reel. I need your, it should be like, there should be no delay. It should be like right now. I need to be able to see it because I'm going to share it with this director. And everything's out in the open. You know, talk about emergency acting, talk about being transparent and being in the moment. Everything's out in the open. So this is the part of our human spirit that needs to come through cinema or through any medium of artistic expression. It has to be transparent and uninhibited, you know, because we want the real stuff, you know, we want the real stuff. And so I was telling this actor, he was nervous because he's so talented, but he thinks because in some of his work, he's speaking in French. I'm like, it doesn't matter. You know, you as a director, Stephen, you know, it doesn't matter if you're speaking any language. If you're connected, it's like watching a gifted ballerina. You just can't take your eyes mm-hmm. off. And you often see that with really talented actors. They'll think that they're never good enough. And that's why they keep digging so deep, looking for approval, you know, looking for constant approval because there was something denied, you know, when they were kids, you know.
Right.
And so the gift comes through that way.
You know? Right. I remember my two short films ago, maybe like 3 years ago, I shot this film called Power Forward. It's about a guy on a basketball court. His Chinese girlfriend's coming to visit him on the basketball court mm-hmm. with some bad news. And I wanted her to speak Mandarin on the phone. I don't speak a lick of Mandarin, but I want her to speak Mandarin on the phone. And so we had no translator on set. So I'm basically just trusting this actress is not ruining my film by saying the lines in Mandarin. And as she's speaking, I'm like, she's saying the lines. Like, I get it. Like, even though I don't know.
Felt it.
Yeah, I understood. I felt like I trusted that she was saying these lines. I had no even thought of it after that. I was like, she's such a good actress. She was killing it. And I was just like, oh, wow. Yeah, she's there. She's connected. I get it. I knew what she was saying, even though it's just sounds and it's random sounds to me. Acting is something that's so, I think spiritual is a strong word, but it's almost there because it transcends words. It's energy, it's essence. It's something you bring into the room that you aren't even sometimes aware you're bringing into the room. I've been in casting rooms where an actor walks in, an actress walks in. I'm just like, no. And they're just walking in. And maybe they even look the part. But something with the energy is just like, no, I can't. They're not there. Or someone walks in and I'm just like, yes, they're absolutely the one. Just make sure, are they good? Yes, they're good. Let's go. They know right away. So, all the times when I was acting back in the day and I thought I was killing it and I didn't get the part. It was probably for those reasons. You never know what you're bringing into the room.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of stories, this is the time. What's your craziest on-set story? Daniel DeWeldon.
Oh man, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, this. I'm just going to tell the story. It revolves around a film. So it's not on set. It's for an audition. So I got through my representatives. I get the breakdown sometimes shared with me, and sometimes they'll share stuff with me, even if it'll be really right for me. And I always had a rule, like I won't work for no pay, you know, at some point. I don't advise, I wouldn't say that 5 years ago, but I started to work enough where I needed to get paid, you know? And so that kind of qualified myself and the types of projects that I was looking to work on. So this breakdown came through and I read the breakdown from my agent, but it was deferred pay, for a SAG deferred film. And I'm like, I'm just not going to do it. You know, it's just like, so I said, but I read the breakdown and the part was so right for me. And I'm like, God darn it. Like, I'm not going to do this, you know, and I'm thinking, oh man, no pay, you know? So I'm going to drive across town to do this job, to audition, and walked into the casting office. And I think I was second to the last person, if not the last person, that was auditioning on the callback day. Walked into the room, and I think there was about six or seven people in the room, and I did the audition. And the audition went so well, the director said to me, can you do that again, you know, to see, to make sure it wasn't a happy accident, you know? And so I did the scene again, and they were like, whoa, you know, that's great. And so I left, and it wasn't an hour later. Again, it was deferred pay. This is one of the biggest billboards that I got as an actor to keep going. And they wrote my manager, Barry Cross, and said, not only do we want to offer Daniel the part, but we're going to pay him like a SAG rate. You know, it was like crazy.
Nice.
And so, I mean, I started crying. I started crying like, how could this is crazy, because the part was so right for me. And so the part of the story that I want to really get to is the feelings that we try to capture, you know, as filmmakers and artists. I had that feeling when I read the part, and it felt so good. And then I went there, and then meeting the people in the room, they were so amazing, you know, and the feedback was so good. And then the good feeling when they offered me the part, and then decided to pay me. And then I've gone on and have done, I did Weekend Warriors with the same director. That was a full SAG film, full pay. We're getting ready to do another film, which I wish I could tell you guys about and who's involved.
Which is good stuff. For anybody who doesn't know, when an actor can't tell you what it is, that's a good thing.
Yeah. And so we're working on a third project together. So the point of this story was the good feeling, you know, like you said earlier, Stephen, like people you want to work with, people you want to dance with, that are solution oriented, empathetic, team players, you know, because that's where the creativity lies. Creativity lies in, you know, like what I call, like I, what I like to call is beautiful, tough love. You know, you call people on their stuff, but you bookend it with love, right? So it's in those feelings. And so here I'm doing all this work with this director and meeting all these wonderful people. And that's the threshold. So that's my crazy story of how that happened. And then the experience just keeps multiplying, you know, and always being, never getting ahead of that process. I think if anything, that's my process, is trying to be part of the solution. Nice. You know, even as a character, as an actor in a scene, I was telling somebody the other day, I'm like, whether you're playing the villain or the hero, both have hope. Both characters will always have the greatest amount of hope and empathy, even if it's self-deprecating to themselves.
Right.
And so to be able to play that, and that's where the creativity lies. I think that's in all art, whether it's painting or a ballet or a musician or an actor, we connect with those people because they let us in. When they let us in, and that's what's exciting for me as an artist. But yeah, I know that got off track a bit. I'm sorry.
No, that's great. I feel like once you, like as an actor especially too, right? They always say, trust your instincts. And I feel that you seeing that breakdown and saying, oh, this is perfect for me, I'm going to go for this, even though my logical and my, you know, my plans say, don't work for no money. Your instinct said, this is you, this is yours. And you trusted that and you went for it. And I think that's a good lesson for actors going up, that like, yeah, trust your instincts on camera, on stage, but also trust your instincts in life too. Because that will help you get the part that's right for you. I think that's really powerful.
I think a lot of times we're misfiring, you know, like a car that's not tuned properly, whether we're just doing this interview right now or, you know, auditioning for a show or a movie or what have you. And I think sometimes we're misfiring and we don't know we're misfiring, you know, even as human beings. And I think as an actor, as I continue to grow, I learn more and more how I have been misfiring in the past and how I might be misfiring right now, right? And so, and how do I bring myself into alignment and have a good time with you guys, you know, and just chat it up.
What are your projects for 2021? Do you have anything upcoming other than the thing you can't talk about?
I got a little breath on another film that I wrote that looks like it might be moving forward. We'll know in the next couple of weeks. Very exciting project. It's called V for Vengeance. And the project that I can't talk about, it's just because of the people that are already attached, I can't speak on. But that particular film is, very, very exciting, just in terms of the character that I'll be playing in the movie, which is a really tough character that is coming to a crossroads, who can't be tough anymore. You know, it's kind of like thematically speaking of what I was speaking of a minute ago. How do we stop misfiring, you know? And a villainous character can be very misfiring if they're killing people, you know?
Right.
So I'm excited to play this character that is, he's come to a crossroads where he's crossing over from the dark side to the light side, you know, and I don't think we see that a lot in characters, you know, so especially as being one of the lead antagonists in this film. So I'm excited about that. But one that I can speak on is the piece I'm doing with Ilya Volek, which is Red. And we were working with the artist, Danny Minnick, who's also a really great actor. And he did the artistic set direction. He's a very successful painter right now. And so we used his work in this studio piece that we're doing called Red again. And it's with Ilya Volek, where he plays Mark Rothko, I mentioned earlier, and I play his assistant. And it's based on his real true life story, the artist who ended up committing suicide. So his last collection sold for $86 million after he was dead.
Whoa.
And so the play is kind of loosely based on his real life, but he ended up committing suicide after all this great success because of this, you know, tumultuous unconscious maybe that he was dealing with. And so it's exciting to work on this play as an actor because I'm playing again, this younger, ambitious intern to this powerful artist. And so he just, you know, he beats me up left and right through the play, you know, and I've got to survive and I got to fight back. And that's going to be available. We're going to have a cut of that soon, I think. It's with a really great editor named Richard Marshall, who's working on that now. And Michael Arabian directed it as well. So I'm excited for that coming out. And then I have another film that should be coming out in the next couple of months called Chaser that I shot in Ohio in 2018 that's been a little delayed with COVID, which is a very exciting film. That's what's presently upcoming. And certainly nice. Weekend Warriors is about to come out, so we're excited about that.
Nice. And these are all features.
Yes. Nice. Well, Red is a play. That would be shot as a play. But yeah, the other two are Weekend Warriors is a feature film. Chaser is a feature film. The new film that we're in development with. And then I have another project that got slowed too, which is another project of mine called The Elephant Ride, which has Armand DeSanti and Seal attached to the singer Seal. Danny Minnick is also attached to that. Ilya Volek, Michael Arabian, and Richie Greer are directing. Natalie Byrne, who is a actress, is attached to that as well.
Wow, that's
trying to think who else. There's a few other talent I can't come to mind right now, but that's another one that's upcoming. So
nice, yeah, man.
Barring away, you know, trying to find a way and keep working. And
nice, man. You're a hustler, man, and I know me and Al, we love that word. We
hustle, man. Hustle. That's the key word right there, man.
Every day I'm hustling.
Oh, yeah, every day I'm hustling.
Every day I'm hustling. I'm hustling.
Yeah.
We should wake up to that every morning.
Yeah.
No, that, like I said, man, you're definitely putting in the work. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned something about you getting a lot of work through social media.
Yeah, even Adam Skelter, I think he met me either on Instagram. I don't know. That was a couple of years ago. I don't remember. But through social media, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I ended up doing a film in Kentucky, One Must Fall, that's also on Amazon Prime right now, and getting ready to do another project with that director in L.A., Antonio Pantoa. But yeah, being on social media, you know, it's just another platform for people to see your work, to meet you. I've gotten offered, I'm up for another film called The Hit, where the director found me on, I think it was Facebook, called me up, had a meeting, you know, that project's in development, you know, so you still got to put the work in, you know, even if you're on social media. But
that's great. No, I wanted our listeners to hear that because I wanted them to know, the importance of social media and staying relevant, working hard. And you've covered quite a bit on this interview with that. And, you know, I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you, Albert.
And shout out to your Instagram real quick, Daniel. What is this? At Daniel DeWeldon?
Yeah, at Daniel _ DeWeldon.
At Daniel _ DeWeldon. Check him out. Follow him.
Thank you.
What advice would you give, Daniel, to an upcoming actor who is... you know, basically questioning themselves, should I stay in this industry? It's hard right now. It's hard breaking in. What kind of feedback or advice would you give that person if he was sitting in the room with you right now, or her, if she was sitting in the room with you?
You know, you just have to trust your feeling. You know, you have to organize your life in a way as an artist. I remember Uta Hagen said to me, you know, to be a great artist, to be a masterful artist in any craft, even if you're a doctor, she said, takes 20 years of nonstop practicing, searching, discovering, you know, and even then it continues on thereafter. And so one has to organize their life in a way, I think, to be a great artist. And especially in this day and age, like I said earlier, I think you guys agree, the competition is so great, you know, that nature itself is calling up even greater artists than we've ever seen. There'll be a lot of artists that we'll see more than ever too that aren't experienced and haven't done the work. And that's okay because they're doing the work. But to be relevant today, you have to be so good. And goodness comes from great hard work and organizing your life in a way almost like, you know, the archetype of being a priest, where you're finding a way to minimalize materialism around your life, where you can hone your craft and work on your instrument, work on your spirit. And then you get to the point where preparation meets opportunity. And then all of a sudden, an alchemy happens where it's like a child learning how to all of a sudden walk or speak, you know, or any kind of a craft, you know, that you guys can reflect on that you've developed, or anyone that's listening to this, where all of a sudden you learn how to do something. That's what happens with a highly skilled artist. Something clicks into place and then you can't stop it. Then it's almost like figuring out a puzzle, and the puzzle is you figuring out you to acclimate yourself to be in the present moment, as we hear, or the method again, not knowing what's going to happen, but trusting your truest spirit will come through when you don't know. And that's where you can activate purity. As soon as we start thinking too much, we're off the grid then, you know, we're not connected anymore. So, and again, you have to refine your environment early on as a young actor to be able to create safe places to study. If you need to earn money and you don't have the privilege to go to school and not work, you know, life experience is the rehearsal too. You know, like I said, Uta Hagen says, you're only as good as an actor or an artist as you are a person, you know, and get good sleep.
And get good sleep.
Love it, yeah. Man. Love it, man. Love it. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, this is the last question. I ask everybody this question. So we're going to fast forward 40, 50 years from now. You're an old man. You're looking back on your career. What is it that's making you most proud?
If I can remember this interview. Yeah. If I can remember this interview. How about that? And that question. Because that'll take me back to this feeling. And because there was two other souls on the transmission, it'll even be stronger. So, because I'll never forget you, Albert. I clicked with Albert as soon as I met him.
Thank you, brother.
Heard your New York accent.
Thank you, brother.
It sticks out, man.
I grew up mostly in Washington, D.C. and a bit in Newport, Rhode Island. But yeah, you know, D.C. is a stone throw away from New York. And
yep.
Yeah, as soon as I met you, that's why, you know, I mean, truth be told, when I saw you had this channel, I shot a thing out to Albert and said, you know, if you want to chat it up, and here we are. So,
no, I appreciate it. Yeah, just a lot of good people, man. We're just coming across a lot of good, high energy, good vibe, and people that want to help each other out, you know?
That's right. And I think that's you too.
Yeah. No, just being of service to others is really important, man. Especially in an industry that can seem a little cutthroat and a little too Hollywoodish.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I'm a little bit naive to that. Steven and Daniel, I bet you're not.
It doesn't seem like it. It is.
just bringing that little feel of kindness back into the industry, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's important. And, you know, if we can do that and we can bring that and connect people, which we want to, you know, it's all the merrier, man.
Daniel, thank you for doing this. Appreciate you.
Thank you. I had a blast, and I'll shoot you over some material. Can't wait to jump back on and like you guys said, hang out in the future.
Absolutely. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you. If you enjoyed this episode and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. For more info about us, please follow us on Instagram at Once Upon a Film Industry. This episode has been edited by Kelsey Coleman. Theme music by Epidemic Sound. Thanks for listening, guys. See you next week.